Okay, everybody, we'll go ahead and get started here on time, so thanks. Call this meeting to order, Staff Council Monday, February 6th. To go along with all the changes. My first meeting is president. Make some changes, we're gonna get more candidates. Kinda hot. Alright, thanks, everybody will call to order, vote, would you like to take a roll?
Yes.
President.
Hello. Chad. Jim.
President.
Teresa. Brianna.
President.
President.
Yes.
Olga.
President.
Joe. Jesse. Kim. Corey. Sue.
Yes.
Suzanne. Suzanne Nicolai. Lindy Root. Chris Brooks. Jim Grossman.
Yes.
Matthew Martin.
Yes.
Katie Miller. And Katie Miller. Charlotte Stanford.
Yes.
Kathy Melvin. Suzie Fry. John Walter. Jessica Armstrong. Kimon Nelson. Sarah Ash.
Yes.
Dina John. Jessica Allen. Kim Knudsen. Alexander Chisholm. Lena Kudikoff. Janelle Marathon. Amanda Wall.
Yes.
Melissa Campbell.
Yes.
Ellery Minor.
Yes.
Karina Gonzalez.
Yes.
Anybody who's in the dinner call?
I think I misheard you, I thought I heard Joe is here. Joe Allen.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks again to our members, both new members and incumbents, for the attendance here this morning. I'd like to thank the Chancellor for breathless providing. We don't always have this many members present, so I think that, it's not a coincidence. Attendance. So thank you, Chancellor Thomas. Our first order of business is to approve our agenda. We have our agenda here. I would entertain a motion to approve the meeting agenda for today's meeting. Thank you. Thank you. Any discussion, any edits, revisions to the agenda for today? Okay. Hearing none, we have an agenda. And the next item is a green dot minute. And I think for the green dot minute, unless anybody certainly entertain any other suggestions, but I would just observe, and I'll address this in a little more detail during the officers' reports, but I would like to mention that the university is moving forward on the hiring of diversity and equal opportunity director, and that's sort of been a long time coming. And there were good forums a couple of weeks ago with the two candidates, and Vice Chancellor Burrell has indicated to us that within the next couple of weeks, I think they aim to make a hire and to make that announcement. So that's a positive development. I didn't see a few others at those forums. So thank you for attending and offering your input, your perspective. It's a very important position, and it's something that we're here to hear new developments about. So that's what I would observe there. Anything else? Anything else to your green dot? Okay. All right, and with that, we'll move into the Chancellor's remarks. So, thanks.
Thank you. Sounds like the mic is on. Good thing. So, Echo makes comments. I was very happy to see the turnout at the forums last week. For the director of diversity and equal opportunity. 50 people in the room for each of those, you know, good mixture of faculty, staff, and students. So, very happy. Many people, on the order of 26 or 28, filled out the online form for feedback on that. So, again, not too bad. So, about that. I meet with that search committee at 9:30 right after this for their final report. And so we'll be acting on that probably this week. We have two other searches underway. The chancellor search, permanent chancellor search. Good news, UAF deserves a permanent chancellor, of course. Very happy to see that search underway. And I hope you've seen the advertisements that have been in the newspapers across Alaska. But that's been posted in the Chronicle of Higher Education as well. And so that one is currently actively underway. Similarly, the vice chancellor of student affairs is posted after being recruited and on our committees for each of us. I'll move down to strategic pathways phase two. Remind you that encompasses the following areas: fisheries, health, e-learning, community campuses, student services, human resources, university relations, and institutional research. Remind you that you have the opportunity individually and collectively to provide your input on them in a variety of ways. There are public forums prior to each of the next two Board of Regents meetings, the meeting in March and the meeting in June. Decisions are supposed to be made at the June meeting. They will be, the President may pull a few options off the table in at the March meeting and use it as an opportunity to get the feel of the board as well as to how they lean with respect to the various options or with respect to other ideas that he may offer at that time. He's extending the period for input both publicly through your listeners and again trying to get a feel for the board, so he's perhaps not as surprised as he was with the education shifts that you saw last semester. So, you also can fill out the online form that's available for options for each of those areas. I would encourage you to do that. The last time I looked, there were quite literally only a handful on health, for example. And there were something like 60 on university relations. So a significant imbalance in responsiveness. So I encourage you to provide your input in those areas and ask for your colleagues to do the same. We're taking a little different approach this time. The summit team is allowed to soar, if you will, and provide comment on the various options for each of these areas. the scoring occurs in five areas, so if I can remember them all. Usually I forget one, and Susan has to help me out. So it would be access, quality, efficiency, community, and sustainability. So those are the five areas that we're asked to score each of the options on. In addition, we'll be providing very specific feedback about our view of the acceptability or lack thereof for each of the options. So taking a bit different approach than we did last time as a leadership team. We have that conversation today, for example, at our core training. So, a work in progress. We've also held meetings. Some of you probably heard that on holding meetings or have held meetings on each of those areas with the effective group to prepare them in part for their meeting with the President, but also to prepare the leadership team So we have a little broader idea of unintended consequences and making sure we're getting, feedback from those that would be impacted. So, a little different approach than we go through. Okay, you want to try to learn as we go as well. Released budget targets, you may have seen that in the announcement that came out from the University of Relations. Remind you that the governor proposed a flat budget for the university, $325 million, that's for the statewide system. the Senate has been talking about a staged continuing decrease, 5% this year, 3% next year, and 2% the following year, with the goal of reducing the state budget by an additional $750 million. Certainly you'll hear other rhetoric about the goals of the legislature and their perspective that may be somewhat contrary to the governor's perspective on the university's budget. The House really hasn't weighed in on specifics yet, although all of the interactions I've had on the House have been more positive. They're saying that the budget's been cut a little further than it should have been cut, and so I expect we'll end up coming down to conference committee, and we'll see how that plays out as the session unfolds. We set our budget targets that dealt with the fixed cost increases, right? Things like utilities go up, home care go up, right? We have to deal with those. There is no planned salary increase. That's usually a large piece of fixed cost increases. That is not built into this budget package, with one exception, and that is the UAFT collective bargaining agreement has a last year agreement, and they have a small increase in there. So there is a small piece related to that, but that's the only exception that we can call. Statewide and the Board of Regents have set a strategic reallocation internally, and so between those two, fixed costs and that statewide reallocation, it's about a 6% reduction applied across the board, but it is not being implemented across the board. So one thing I would tell you all is what we have released are targets. It's a conversation. It's a starting point for those conversations. And we expect feedback from units on what they're able to do and what the implications are, and there may very well be adjustments to that. And of course, as the legislative dialogue unfolds, there may be further adjustments as that process plays out. The budget planning targets are based on a 3% enrollment decline, and I know the goal is to grow enrollment, but there's been a lot of bad news across the institution. The budget cuts over time, the uncertainty related to the continuation of programs associated with strategic pathways, and some Title I issues, just to be talking about it. And that bad news ends up impacting enrollment. So I'm trying to be realistic about the forecast, and so a 3% decline in enrollment was included in that budget. In the Title IX, we have a U.S. Department of Education Office of Civil Rights announcement coming out in the next 2 weeks. It's going to have some bad news for the university. They did a review of our process, our compliance from the years 2011 through 2014. And of course, we really took up that effort, as I think you all know, beginning in 2014, and made significant progress since then. Required training, faculty, staff, and students, Green Dot program, a whole variety of other elements, right, since that date. But prior to that, during that period of compliance review, There was some things we didn't do right, and that will be reflected in that report. We'll be raised there in the next few weeks. So I want to give you a heads up for that was coming. And I might ask, I'm going to catch her a little bit by surprise here. I'm going to ask Susan to speak to spring enrollment numbers very briefly to give you an update about what's happening.
So the latest report suggests that we're about, and these numbers aren't final because these are what we would call our opening enrollment numbers. We won't really know what our overall semester enrollment for the spring semester is until the end of the semester. We have a variety of late start classes and other things that impact enrollment and that. So there may be some adjustment in these numbers. But the enrollment is down in terms of student credit hours by about 5.5%. The decrease is larger at the community and technical college than it is at the Fairbanks campus. In part, that's a result of a shift of some general education requirements sections to the Fairbanks campus over the past year. But it's also related to the continuing relatively low employment in the Fairbanks area, which tends to impact student enrollments particularly. It's really too soon to say what enrollments at community campuses and rural areas will be because those enrollments don't correlate from the beginning of the semester to the end of the semester, so we really have to wait till the end to see how they turn out. So that's not particularly encouraging news. One piece of news that's relatively good is that our first-time freshman enrollment held up relatively well for spring semester. But the area which really decreased sharply was returning students and transfer students. And so we're still trying to understand those results. But we are concerned that the budget news, that news connected with concerns about strategic pathways, concerns that are raised in people's minds about whether programs will continue, whether the industry will continue to call the institution to attend. All of those concerns are things that we fear are potentially impacting our enrollment. What can we do? I think that we need to continue to spread the good news about the University of Washington Fairbanks. It's created opportunities for students for many years. We are still offering good quality programs, excellent quality programs, and these programs clearly lead to better employment opportunities for our graduates. And we have obligations through our accrediting organization to teach out any students that enroll in our program. So students really need to be concerned that the program is going to vanish on them. We need to treat students responsibly when they have to eliminate the program. So if you get an opportunity, let people know that we're here to serve our region and the state, that we will continue to offer quality programs and opportunities.
Then I'll take any questions. Okay. So last March we hosted the Credit Science Summit Week, and it's going really well. We have about 1,000 people here, and we have some other teams right now. And this whole projection was very helpful to our officials meeting. And that meeting went so well with the Art Council, the State College, the U.S. Chair, decided to host the ministerial meeting, the final meeting of the U.S. Chairmanship of the Art Council here in Fairbanks, and that will be in May. And so we may host another Art Science Summit Week because that rotates around the globe. And so the next Art Science Summit Week is going to be in Prague. But we will be hosting the Week of the Arts. It will be May in Chicago. It will be another big event. And the name of the great help there, and the name of the wonderful folks. And we have a show video that's happening this year with huge athlete folks. And I'm really excited about this because we have a big event and it will be a lot of fun. And we'll bring a lot of attention to the University of Fairbanks. Nationally, pretty, you know, we've been saying nationally, internationally, we're doing great. Our research is really soaring, it's actually increasing, and our reputation is really strong. And it's really great to bring these type of activities to Fairbanks. And so I'm really excited to come here, and we appreciate any help that you're using to provide for the meeting. Thank you very much. So I want to add to that sense of optimism. If, you know, UAF has not suffered the same enrollment declines as our two sister institutions in the state. So that's great. That's an indication that we are maintaining quality at a high life level. So I want to make sure that you're aware of that. We also have, as you know, two F-35A squadrons coming into the Isles area, which will bring roughly 3,000 people to the community. So we have the opportunity for growth coming soon. So there is good news on the front. The fact that the governor suggested a flat budget instead of a reduction, telling us that we're near the bottom of this effort to reduce this. That's a good signal as well, right? So it is good news on this front. We shouldn't let that go. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of stress among the faculty and staff. I certainly recognize that and appreciate what you all are doing for your jobs. I would encourage you to focus on what you can do, right, instead of the things that are out of our control. Right? There's a fair amount out of our control. So what can you do? You can advocate for your programs. You can provide the best possible student and faculty service in your roles in your current positions, right? Keep that smile on your face. Don't let it get you down. It brings the whole place up, right? So do what you can do to maintain the quality or improve the quality and help improve the morale across your institution. Help each other out. When somebody else, a colleague, is feeling stressed, have that conversation. Let them vent, right? And then share some optimism with them. Those are things we can control. Thank you.
Any questions from like for the chancellor or maybe even for the provost of UCL? How about anybody online? I would also related to your comments and Chancellor Thomas, it's clear from a system-wide level that both here at UAM as well as other campuses across the state that communication has really been a deficiency in the process of pathways, but also just generally, I think, across. I mean, we've found that in our own engagement survey here at UAM, but I think they've also identified that at statewide and other campuses. And so it's been a focus of my thinking over time that, of course, it's the communication between leadership and frontline staff is important to maintain and to strengthen, but it's also, I think, a responsibility of ours as university leaders and as staff council representatives to strengthen the communication that we have with our own units and constituents too. So that's definitely going to be a focus of ours moving forward. So I'd just like to thank again Chancellor Thomas and Provost Henrys and BCR Henson for being here for their time and their perspective. Okay, moving on. We have some time here for public comments. Do we have anybody present for public comments? We'd like to. No, we don't have any microphones in the back, but I'd be happy to invite folks up here. Anybody? Okay. Anybody online? Anybody online for public comment? Okay. Thanks. And so then for our guest speaker, we have Michelle Renfrew, who's got some things to share with us about the upcoming ongoing centennial events and efforts.
Thank you.
Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for having me here today. I am pleased to be here to talk with you about some good news. There's lots of things going on right now, and I actually think that it's a blessing right now that we have our 100-year celebration. I think it's a great opportunity to bring people together to celebrate this really important milestone for our university. So I was asked to come and share with you today a little bit about what we're doing, what we have planned, and see how you all can get engaged. And first, just want to say thank you to so many of you here already today have had something to do with the Centennial in one way or the other. So just, you know, thank you, and we'll be looking to engage you throughout the year. We really kicked off, as you all know, on New Year's Eve. We did have some question about when do we want to start this year, but the celebrating the entire year 2017 seemed to be a good fit. So we kicked it off with our spectacular event. Threw some new things in this year. KUAC was phenomenal, where they, for the first time, put together a soundtrack that played simultaneously with the fireworks show. We had a little setback there, and that was only because we had a major windstorm, and it knocked out one of the transmitters, so unfortunately it wasn't broadcast over the radio, but you could still dial in and hear it online. And so that was really phenomenal, and they spent a lot of time and effort putting that together, so a huge thanks to them. And we're going to be celebrating it through various events and activities throughout the year. But it was really an opportunity, mostly, to build that sense of awareness about UAS and UA, use it as an opportunity to build pride, and also some very focused fundraising and development efforts. Something like this doesn't happen overnight. We began our planning, I think, probably about 2 years ago, and Kim Davis, who's here in the back with me, she is really the project manager for this, but I think Kim has probably been thinking about this for the past 4 or 5 years. But we established an overarching planning committee, and there are different subcommittees that are underneath that overarching planning committee, and I would say we have about 100 people on various subcommittees throughout campus. So again, many of you here today have taken part in one of those things. And we developed an overarching communication plan. It wasn't just about celebrating for the sake of celebrating. We really wanted to make it meaningful and purposeful. We also were very sensitive to the fact that we were, even a year or two ago, going through some budget difficulties, and we did not want the community or the campus to think that we were just planning parties and events for the sake of doing that. So we stepped back and we really thought, how can we do this in a meaningful way for the campus? And then our first event, and it is a little confusing for some because they say, well, didn't you do that with the Trafiada and the Cornerstone dedication in 2015? Wasn't that your centennial? And what we like to say is that we have a number of very important milestones that started with this kickoff event, but 2017 is really our actual year. So, one of the things that we did after we put together our communication plan and really identified what we wanted to get out of this, we developed our graphics. And so you've seen the new Centennial graphic and its tagline, Celebrating the Century. And that is on the different creative around the campus. We also developed a Centennial toolkit so that units could apply the Centennial graphic if they wanted to on their materials. We certainly aren't requiring it, but just developed a suite of materials that we would encourage campus to use, if at all possible, in their regular development of such things. And these are online on our website. We also put up street banners and some other environmental signage around the campus, and this was done toward the fall. We wanted students and faculty and staff, when they came back at the end of August and September, to get excited about what was going to be happening when we kicked off in January. So we started building some excitement and kind of educating people that this was coming. And this is a detail that's in Dine 49 here with some great facts that we put together, and then just various banners around the campus. We've seen some lighted gobos over this last couple months with different lights and messaging on different buildings, and so we'll be doing that here for the next little while as well. We've also built a centennial website, and this is really kind of the home for anything that is centennial related, uas.edu/centennial. One of the things that is an ongoing project is this website time, or this timeline. It's a parallax scrolling timeline, and if you haven't checked it out, I would really encourage you to. It's a very integrative experience where you can not just experience like the different dates and important things in our history, but you can see videos, you can listen to interviews, you can do and see a number of different things. And we have the first two chapters up and available, and we're continuing to work on chapter three. But it's definitely something that takes a little bit of time, but we also wanted it to be something that really did capture our history and be something that would be around for a really long time. We are continuing to update the website with 100 stories, and so these are 100 individuals that have been instrumental to our history. Of course, we can't include everyone that's ever done anything amazing for our university, and we really wanted to feature an interesting mix of people that all contributed to UAF in a number of different ways. And so these are continuing to be updated and populated on the website, and will throughout the year. And then another thing, one of the subcommittees, Bill Schnabel, actually is leading, is Big Ideas. And so they've been gathering input from the campus, specifically to big research ideas and discoveries. And again, looking at kind of breadth and depth of the different kinds of neat things that we've done, big ideas that have been instrumental into really pushing us forward to be in the university that we are today. And those will continue as well to be forthcoming and updated there. We do have an event calendar that's online as well, and that's being populated as new things come up. We would love to incorporate anything that you're doing in your unit, schools, colleges, into the centennial timeline. And as we're sharing this information as often as we can into different audiences. And as I mentioned earlier, fundraising, there is a philanthropic aspect to the centennial, and how can we use this milestone in our history to engage donors and to raise money for some very specific things. And so the three initiatives that were identified as being initiatives that fit within our history, and as much as it's about celebrating our past 100 years, it's maybe even more about setting the stage for the next 100. So centennial scholarships for students, the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, and TROS-YADA are three of the main fundraising initiatives that we've titled kind of our centennial fundraising. If you haven't started using our UAF 100 hashtag, we would love for you to do so. Anything that we're doing around the campus throughout this year, the two hashtags, Nanak Nation, certainly, but UAF 100 will help us kind of tag everything that's going on. We're also using that hashtag as we're sharing information with all of our followers, whether it's one of our profiles, one of our big ideas, notable moments in our history, and then also it's a great way to see all of our stakeholders and our supporters and how they're using the 100 hashtag on themselves. We have a social wall here that you can click on the website, and you can kind of get a first-hand look to see who's been using it and how they're supporting us with their activities. One of the things we did is we put this banner that you see here in the Aurora magazine. We send the Aurora magazine out to 23,000 people now. We scaled a little back around the world. And so we ask people to put their name out on there, the year that they graduated, where they're at, and these have literally been coming in from around the world, and it's been really neat to see. Truly, it's inspiring to see how many people are really out there that love UAS and continue to support us in many different ways. And another thing that we did was, again, one of our goals was to try to educate people on our history and our role in Alaska. And so we worked with eLearning, and they did an amazing job on this video that showed kind of a short synopsis of, in a fun and interesting way, that we shared at convocation through the university address, and we've also put it out on social media. So I was just going to shoot. If we can get this to work, let's see. You would like to see the rest of that amazing video, it is on the website. That was just a preview. I'm not sure what happened there. But again, a huge shout out to eLearning. I think that's just one example, again, of the campus all kind of pitching in to make this possible. Another way that that's happened is the Alaska Annex did and debuted the throwback jersey. I think this was dated back to like 1930. Actually, Kim, remember when this was? 1937. And there's a big order where you could order it, and I think it's also a fundraising effort for the Alaska Annex, and it's been really popular. So, doing some unique and creative things to celebrate this. And then what we have as far as plans for the year. As you know, we've already had our first big kickoff event. The next one is going to be the Blue and Gold Centennial Gala. The proceeds for that this year are going to be going to the Centennial Scholarship Fund. We're going to be doing a recreation on May 3rd. That's the actual anniversary of the college creation, when Governor Strong at the time actually signed the bill creating the college. And so we are planning an event around that right now in what we're going to be calling Centennial Square. May 6th is going to be our 100th Centennial Commencement Ceremony. And as Vice Chancellor Hinsman talked about, Week of the Arctic is coming. And then something different this year is our Alumni Rendezvous is going to be moved to July. Typically that coincides, or is held in September, but they're moving it to July, hoping that that might appeal to alums and folks that maybe are not, or maybe outside, that that would give them something exciting to come back to Fairbanks to be a part of, and walk with us in the Golden Days Parade, because UAF always has a strong presence there. And then we're going to be sending off, I guess, with a final holiday gathering and then the Sparktacular event December 31st. So the events will kind of come full circle. And there are a number of smaller events and milestones planned in between these. Many of you have things that are scheduled and that you're celebrating as part of the centennial, or at least advertising them as so. So the big list is on the website, but these are just kind of the signature, the big things. And again, would like to invite everyone to attend the gala. I hope you've got your tickets. Otherwise, I do think I just heard that they sold out again, which is phenomenal, because we bumped it up to the Carlson Center this year, so that was to increase capacity by another 100 or so seats, and so huge, very grateful for the community to continue to support UAF and to come out for this special event, and knowing that the money is going to be going to student scholarships makes it even better. Lastly, this is just an idea of some of the things that we have been working on. Again, many of you have taken part in these in one way, shape, or the other. We did last Sunday put an insert. A team, sheriff's committee, put together this tab that was put in the Newsminer. It was circulated on base, and we also will have these available at gala, and it really is just kind of a summary of the events and activities that we have, and sharing some of the profiles and people and some of the work that people have been doing on Centennial. And lots of great things going on. I don't want to take up any more time than is necessary, so if there's any questions about this, I'm happy to answer them. If you would like to get involved, we would love to have you. We're meeting every couple weeks. Tim Davis in the back, again, as the project manager, and kind of just pulling everything together and making sure that we're connecting the dots and just kind of know who's doing what or who would like to do what, and trying to tie them in with the appropriate resources so that we can work together to make it happen. So with that, I can leave it for questions.
Thanks, Michelle. Yeah, questions for me? There's a lot of exciting stuff.
Okay. Well, thank you again for having me today.
Thanks very much.
I did leave pins, just one last thing, centennial pins. Trivia tour, where you go around to a couple different locations around the campus. You have a scarf, a blue and gold scarf with the Centennial logo, and then also extra copies of this on the back table as you go out. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Michelle.
Okay. I did notice, by the way, that we have both of our other governance folks here. We have both Colby and Chris, so if there's no objections, I might make an effort to we can jump in with officer reports after we hear from those two, if that's okay with you guys. Did you hear that? Okay, great. Thank you. Appreciate the support. Colby maybe stepped out, but Chris, if you'd like to come up, and yeah, thanks. So, program members, I'd like to introduce Chris Allen, who's the president-elect of UAF.
Thank you.
you for showing up here on this international Super Bowl holiday. today we have a meeting, which you might also know from some media coverage, so probably our name of the newspaper, you know, it's a little bit controversial news. I guess first of all, I'll start off, we'll give a summary of the comments I'll talk about, and then set up a way that we can chat with the meeting, either in person or electronically. I'm going to try to control the members to nominate friends or perhaps a meeting to the next faculty senate president elect, because those elections are in April. And so I'm sure staff council members similar cadence, and that's really cool. We'll be here sooner than we think, with rapidly increasing daylight. The second thing I will mention is the two resolution, well, we have three resolutions. One is a motion, two resolutions, and one is not controversial, just approval of a minor in FMO policy. The other two are the so-called no confidence votes, and President Johnson and or the Board of Regents. And so this has generated a little bit of a controversy. The UAA has already passed a resolution of no confidence vote. Jim Johnson and Carl Kowski. And so there are a number of frustrations. One is in part of the strategic pathways process, and then the other has to do with their switch to Gmail, there's IT concerns. Ours are a little bit different. The first motion is really quite targeted in the sense that it goes after the decision-making process that led to the decision, or I should say re-decision, of locating the new Alaska College of Education administratively in Juneau in the buildings. That was a decision that caught all of us by surprise, all the way up to the chancellor level. And so I'll let the resolution speak for itself, because it's largely just a summary of transcripts of the Board of Regents meeting that led to that decision. And I think there is some room for legitimate criticism there. And as far as my personal opinion, whether we should follow up with a no confidence vote, I'll leave my opinion out of that. However, I think these processes are important, because it's a line of communication that establishes some sort of common, agreed upon written record. The second resolution is more or less a general criticism of the entire strategic pathways process and the leadership of Jim Johnson in general. And that, in a lot of ways, that was the UAA resolution. And I've heard a lot of interesting email the last few weeks from Vinny Bastard, and I can even read it, which I respond to any of it. And I do know that UAA is quite keen that we pass that resolution, and they want us to kind of fall in line with their leadership on that. So those are the two important things. Actually, there are three important things I want to talk about during the seminar. Is then also to talk about some other good things, and one of the good things, at least for me, is my research in the HERC facility, the mind control, weather control, earthquake facility down near Glen Allen. It's a little known fact that actually the radio science, the state is radio science as well. That will be online, the first UAL campaign, and it will be scheduled later this month. And it's a gigantic radio that makes the sky glow. You can hear on shortwave radio, etc. And if you have a digital camera capable of taking pictures of Milky Way and the galaxy, you can find a dark spot, or if you know a rural photographer that finds a dark spot near Fairbanks and you know where to look, you will be able to see the artificial aurora. Be one of the few people who have actually managed to capture that on
digital film over the couple of these days. It will literally look like experiments based on films, or if not, then anything that we have. So those are three things that I want to talk about. And if there's any questions.
Can you hear me?
1 p.m. later.
Thanks very much, Ruth. Appreciate it. Hey, Golden. This is Colby Grill, the president of the LA SUAF. Thanks for being here.
For 5 minutes, I was late.
No, you're fine.
Hello, everyone. Thank you again for, once again, for this opportunity to come and share some perspective with you. I enjoyed Michelle's presentation, and Amanda, I have to ask, if we were to equate the 25 cents right to campus, you know, cost plus inflation, you know, what would our transportation be now? I'm interested in what that would be. maybe be less, maybe more. Well, keep it where it is right now. I want to touch on a few things today. First, legislative advocacy in June that students do every year. An update on the student's resolution on the Haven training and single credit course. Some key initiatives that the students are bringing up, and lastly, we're going to touch on strategic pathways. Every year, as you might know, we send a delegation of students to Juno to advocate on behalf of not only UAF students, but UA students. We come together, of course, bring our perspectives and our issues, but we ultimately decide as a statewide system group of students what issues are most important to us. And we meet with just about every legislator in the Capitol. It's a whirlwind of meetings, but we find that just showing the why behind the university is really effective. I think where legislators would much rather hear from students benefit from the hard work that you all do and the money that they allocate to the university rather than the flow of administrators or lobbyists. So I find that investment on our part is valuable and brings a return back to university in the form of goodwill, understanding, and also dollars. Just before the conclusion of the semester last semester, the students adopted a resolution asking for two basic things. One, that the $150 fine be replaced with a registration hold, and two, that a single credit condensed course covering similar topics to even all EU and cultural leadership training elements implemented, they chance to receive that resolution. At beginning fall 2017, registration hold will take place of the $150 fine, and any type of extended approval single credit course will be offered covering the topic currently covered by Haven, not as a replacement to, but an alternative for. And of course, the details of the course will be worked out in the normal course development process through faculty credit. You will probably be hearing and seeing messaging and communication about student fee initiatives. The fee paying off the bonds of the SRC will be expiring in the next year. So the students are proposing a new fee that will cover building maintenance and repair, as well as R&R and to compensate for a portion of the fee that was going to support that. So we'll be proposing that fee in this next coming option. Potentially also the sustainability fee will be sunsetting in 2020. That funds all of the sustainability efforts at UAF, recycling, green bikes, All of that is funded through a $20 per student fee. So we'll be asking the students to either approve or continue that fee at the upcoming election. Lastly, I wanted to touch on strategic pathways and the shared governance system that we have here at the university. I have found that it's not my value as a student governance leader in strategic pathways in any governance discussion doesn't come from my technical expertise or from knowledge base that I have, other than my expertise in student experience. So it is my perspective, rather than my thoughts or feelings about an action that are really valuable. Students have a role in terms of role advocacy and representing that perspective. So I think it's important to understand what our role is in the system. Ultimately, it is the responsibility of the president and board to make these decisions. But it is our place to make sure those decisions are informed and to the best of our ability to encourage the decisions that will have the best outcomes possible. We also have an obligation as governance groups to participate in the shared governance process as well, to be open to that governance feedback. It's all too easy to become siloed and to be constantly focused on what the Board of Regents is doing and what the President is doing. It is our obligation to be open to different perspectives and opinions. So I would encourage you not to lose perspective of that, as that is something I'm working on as well. Just to make sure that we aren't losing sight of the work that the good work that we do. With that, I will stop and be happy to take questions. Thanks, Holden. It was in addition to a portion of the SRC fee now goes to R&R, my understanding that the portion, the dollar amount contributed to that isn't sufficient to maintain a quality level of equipment and facilities at the SRC. Students feel it's an obligation of ours and the SRC, and it is an investment of ours that we maintain it and that the facilities. Or it didn't make it yet, but that's the intention.
I did have a question about the even training converting it over to the credible. So technically, if somebody didn't take their training, there would be no student developer until they were registered for the next term. So they could technically go for a whole term without completing more of the training. And it would be for the financial, putting it on their account, the venture, and things within the financial part of the university. I'm just trying to understand that's what is being approved at a central level.
Well, my understanding is now that is the case in which you could go and hire two semesters, you could go for three semesters without taking any training before the client actually hit the threshold for the stop enrollment. As far as when the registration would be applied, whether it be for as it is now, you have to complete Part A before a certain date. You know that piece could be completed before registration is backed up, but that's what students are encouraged to do now is before she to complete that portion. So that's an option, but I won't speak for the chancellor on how that will be implemented.
Curious about it. And the sustainability fee, with it coming up for a kind of renewal and the whole set of practices that the city itself is having with recyclables, because currently my understanding is that, especially in binary way, like recyclables are stuff to trash, there's no one to go. Is that going to be part of the discussion with the students as they vote on it. I don't know what percentage of the actually goes to the recycling program, but it just seems like if we don't have a recycling program that seems very unstable. We're kind of seeing having these bins that say we're recycling, but we're not actually recycling, because I want to, you know, it all goes in the same trash can, all the same stuff, so, you know, kind of really with that. That's the discussion and ultimately a decision that the students will have to make. So they'll have an opportunity to speak on that, so I won't speak on that for them. I know that the board of directors definitely for that group actively collaborates with businesses and organizations and advocates for more sustainability and recycling options. I'll also point out that it is the only sustainability arm of the university that those activities are not carried out elsewhere. To my knowledge, only by the students, so that is an important aspect of thoughts of sustainability, to do more than just recycling.
Anybody else? Anybody online for COVID? Thanks very much. All right. Oh, yeah. Let's move back to item five. Have some pending actions before us. Have your packet either in front of you on the screen or printed out. We have. You have an attachment number 278-1. This is a motion to amend a prior resolution from late last year, I think from our last meeting, 2016. Having some static issues we're trying to get resolved. Really? Yeah. Maybe if there's anybody else online that can, if you're not already muted, just mute. It sounds like we're getting some feedback or some noise from the line, the online connections. I think it's better now. Thank you. Okay. So 278-1. This is a motion to amend our furlough leave language from resolution 277-2. When we initially drafted this resolution, it was meant to take effect with at the beginning of the next fiscal year. Since we approved that resolution within staff council, it's become clear to us that that effective date can actually be moved up, and that can take effect immediately. And I think, based on conversations that we've had with UAF administrators, it sounds like they would target like spring break as like a time to make this change based on their kind of approval process. But it requires us. That would require us to make the amendments to this resolution to amend it to take effect immediately. So that's what this motion is here for. I think because it's in the agenda packet here, I think that we don't need a motion because it's already there. I think that we will open it up for discussion, and if anybody has any changes or questions or inputs about it, I'm happy to do that.
I just wanted to add, I think one of the other reasons we are changing the effective date was one of the concerns was depending on how long it takes to move forward, potentially by the time you reach a higher level of leadership on July 1st, and they would say, no, you've got to start over in terms of the doctor, so we don't want that to happen. We don't have a lot of control about the timeline necessarily, so we want it to be effective immediately. So that's probably the main reason we're coming to the end. I'm wondering if there's any members want to go in a little bit on this. Yes. speech work.
Sure.
Do you want me to speak? Okay. So the reason that we brought this forward was we realized that there's a difference between exempt and non-exempt in terms of legal school for those employees also. So, the issue is that the non-exempt, but are not entered into the system, can automatically acquire legal school, while the other group is not. So this year, HR will be looking into ensuring that they will be able to factor out 20 employees, but given the future, there might be higher number of employees that are under furlough, and we certainly want the legal group to contribute equally. So that's the reason for this. I think that all of the union is included beyond the motion, so the resolution is pretty detailed, but then there's some attached techniques regarding the related to the HR detail.
Yeah, maybe if anybody has any particular questions about it, we can address those. Okay. Should we have a vote? Okay. So, I think we can do a roll call vote.
Yeah.
Do you want me to roll call vote?
I just
need to. Okay, great. So maybe, again, this is just for the motion to amend the prior approved resolution, okay, to amend it to take effect immediately and not on the 1st of July. So all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Excellent, thanks. Motion passes in case that wasn't clear. Sure, yeah, sorry. Anybody online opposed? Forgot to do that. Thanks very much. All right. We have another a couple of documents here. I believe these don't need action by us today, but they have been a couple of updates since our last meeting. We now have a signed resolution in support of an approved and signed resolution in support of the Staff Council Volunteer Day proposal. That has been passed along to the Chancellor. We also have a signed and approved motion to amend the Carolyn Sampson scholarship, and those changes have been formalized and are now official. Any questions about those? Okay. That takes care of our pending actions. We'll move on then to officer reports. Sure. Yeah, that's right. We'll break for we have it scheduled for 10 minutes, and we'll be back here at 10:05. All right. Thanks. Officers reports. I want to start with some good news. Our prior president, Faye Gallant, and her husband, Ben, have a new addition to their family. And they shared some pictures with us. So I have some details here. I'm bad about memorizing poundage, but I think she did provide it. Got it. Okay.
What did I do during that? Do you have this?
No, I think that's great.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, so congratulations to Faye. All right, next. I have a few things that I'd like to discuss. I'm going to try and keep it short, though, and keep things moving. So I do want to welcome all of our new members. Congratulations, welcome, and thank you for being here. We're excited to have you. I want to, just to contextualize, I think, both for our new members and our incumbents, that it's really important. I think that the strength of staff council over the last few terms has been that this is really kind of a bottom-up organization, and we really rely, I think, as it should be, on our members and representatives to drive our priorities and our agenda. As officers, we really just preside. We're not, you know, voting members, and so I don't think that the character of the organization, I really think that should be driven and determined by the representatives. And so we really look forward to hearing your perspectives as members and as representatives. And as I mentioned briefly with the Chancellor, that communication-wise, it's really important, I think, to seek out perspectives from your constituents and your units, to communicate the information that we get from leadership back to the people that the UAF employees that you represent, and for that to be like a two-way channel and conduit of information. We'll get into this a little bit more in orientation later, but it's my goal as an officer, and I think that I can speak for Samara too, that we really want people to feel comfortable always to share their feedback and their perspectives, and to use that to help drive what this organization values and prioritizes. So thanks, first of all, and you know, good luck, and we're really looking to you for help and for direction. Okay, so that's item number one. Item number two, I think, is as Chris and Colby mentioned, strategic pathways. I think it's on everybody's mind. I think that from a governance perspective, this is a topic that's really consumed a lot of energy over the last couple of years. It continues to, or will continue to. I think that is appropriate, but it is just an observation. And so, as the Chancellor said, phase two of strategic pathways is we have options reports from all of those review teams. Again, those eight are community campuses, e-learning, fisheries, health, human resources, institutional research, student services, and university relations. So we did have staff governance representation on each one of those review teams. I think in some cases that governance representation also was conflated with expertise. In some cases, it was not. So what I mean by that is that if you have expertise or particular, like, informed opinions or expertise in any one of those subject areas, it's very important that you provide feedback through the official pathways feedback channels. Okay, there's on. I don't know if it's listed anywhere in our agenda packets, but if you go to alaska.edu/pathways, okay, you can find there the overall framework and plan for each of the phases. Phase one is currently in implementation stage. Phase two is squarely in the feedback stage right now. Okay, so aside from any official channels from the feedback is a very flat and I think equitable process, and so they are seeking feedback from any and everyone that's either affected by or has expertise in any of these areas. So the structures of these options reports, if you haven't read through any of them in the past, they present some specific scenarios for how these functions and components of the university might change or how they are envisioning them to change. Some of them in drastic ways, some of them in like fundamental structural ways across the whole university system. Of course, the most one of the most drastic so far has been the School of Education decision that the Chancellor mentioned. There has been obviously a lot of tension and response to that, but in regard to the phase two options now, in regard to the phase two review areas now, we have the opportunity and I think the responsibility to color and characterize what the President's response recommendation is to the Board of Regents before it happens. So I think that the way that the phase one decision process and implementation process is going shows us that I think it emphasizes even more how important and essential clear and direct feedback from frontline staff people, especially how important that is to provide to the President and to his summit. And I totally take the point that some people might have skepticism about how seriously some of the feedback is taken. From my perspective, as somebody who communicates with leaders and administrators, I think it's taken very seriously. I've been in conversations with people like Vice President for Research Activities Dan White and Vice President for University Relations Michelle Rizek, and they have made reference specifically to feedback that's provided to them through these feedback forms. So I think that especially if there are salient points that are made on a repeated basis, and the Chancellor mentioned university relations as one review area that's received a lot of feedback already, if there are clear messages that come through on a consistent and repeated basis, I am confident and optimistic that feedback has an effect and that has the potential to drive the decisions that are made in these review areas. So all of that is just to say, take the opportunity. If you care about any of those review areas of phase two that I listed, take the time to check out those options reports and provide your feedback on them. In addition, we had a Samara and I were in Anchorage last week for a staff alliance retreat for the system-wide staff governance that includes officers from each of the four. They're not called campuses; they're called major administrative units because it also includes statewide offices, which is not, I guess, a campus, but. So the officers from each of the four MAUs, staff governance groups, meet together as staff alliance. And so we had a retreat for staff alliance, and we discussed at length the phase two of the strategic pathways. And there are, I think, some clear, consistent perspectives across the system about from a staff perspective, what is a good idea and a bad idea in regard to how these phase two review areas, how they might be approached, how changes to them might be approached. So it is a possibility. We could respond, have some kind of like detailed formal response on behalf of system-wide staff governance. That's an option that's available to us. We did not take that option in phase one for a number of reasons, partly because it was that process was unclear. It was in some ways being figured out like as it was ongoing. It was the first time that any of the people, including administrators, had gone through that, and so there were some shifts and changes throughout the process, and so it was. And even the feedback process, I think, was a little bit disjointed. It is an option that's available to us,
either at the staff council level or at the staff alliance level. It's something that I think that we should move on, as soon as we can. You know, as the chancellor mentioned, we, I guess, technically have until June before the board makes any formal decisions or before the president makes any formal recommendations to the board, although they are going to discuss, and it seems like maybe focus their conversations about these review areas in March is the first time that these will be brought up at the Board of Regents. So, again, if you have particular perspective on any of those eight areas or expertise, then maybe in addition to providing feedback through those that feedback form, you can also bring that to staff governance as well, because we can coordinate, if you feel comfortable with that, we can coordinate those responses. If there's an overwhelming perspective on behalf of staff council or staff alliance, we can formalize that and send it directly to the president, alongside the official feedback responses through the website. It's possible, this is something that faculty has done. It's possible for us to provide that feedback, in a letter to the president, for example. That's something we can do, and I'm happy to. Pathways is also on the agenda as an item outside of the office report, so I'll wrap that up there for my end, and we can bring it back up in a few minutes. Yes, Terry. Yeah, good question. Okay. The wig is getting in though, my ears. Okay.
So there would not be time to do a formal letter from staff council that the Board of Regents would get.
Unless it was like a Google Doc that people like responded to and collaborated on outside of our meetings. Yeah, that's true.
And that's possible?
That is possible, I think.
Well, I think that would be a great idea, and I think that with all of us in the room who have, maybe not all of us work in areas that are under the phase two review, but enough of us here are, and we certainly could make our own thoughts known.
I think that's great. I in the interest of time and consistency, I would like to put a pin in this conversation until item 9C, which is within unfinished business. We have a line item for a strategic pathway. So continue thinking about it, and let's bring it up again when it comes up on the agenda. I think it's a good idea. Okay. Next. The Chancellor's Cornerstone Award, which is, again, one of the most prestigious staff awards that's available. The nomination period is still open until the 10th, which is this week. So, again, I've been encouraged by University Relations to continue to plug that award. If you have anybody in mind, for the nomination process, it takes just a little bit of work to do that. You can submit that online. There's a website for the Cornerstone Awards. I don't have the link in front of me. One second. It's at uaf.edu/chancellor/awards. Okay. And again, nominations are accepted through the 10th of February. The Chancellor's Cornerstone Award recognizes the University of Alaska Fairbanks staff for sustained outstanding contributions toward accomplishing and enhancing the UAF mission and strategic plan. Okay. So please consider nominating your colleagues. Next. I'm on the, as Chancellor Thomas mentioned, they are conducting a search for UAS's next sort of permanent term, full term chancellor. We're on our second interim currently, and I think it's a positive, something that we should feel good about, that they're moving forward with a full chancellor search after the last search was abbreviated or canceled. I am on that committee. The Chancellor's Hiring Committee, Search Committee. There are some significant differences, a couple in particular, between the last search and this one. The first is that they are not contracting with a vendor, a search counselor. It's all internal. We have a committee that's full of university stakeholders. It includes staff representation, which I'm happy about. I have been encouraged by ex officio committee member Kari Burrell to seek out either individual potential applicants that any of you think would be good candidates for the position, so that we can contact them and encourage them to apply, or networks that we can reach out to seek out their input about potential candidates. The other significant difference between the last search and this one is that they have put a focus. I don't think it's a requirement, but it's a focus and emphasis on experience within the state of Alaska. It was not emphasized as such during the last search. It doesn't necessarily mean experience with the University of Alaska university system, but at least like familiarity with the state and probably the education system within the state. Okay? They haven't had, as the Chancellor mentioned, it's been in the newspaper as well as the Chronicle of Higher Ed. I'm not going to read all the way through it, but if you go to the website uaf.edu/chancellor/search, I think that they have the text of the ad there, as well as some additional details about the search process. Okay, so again, any potential individuals that you think would be good candidates for a position, or networks and organizations that we could reach out to as a committee to get potential applicants. So we have good ideas about who would be good candidates for a position. Okay. Next. Yes. Yeah, I don't know if it's on the website. It has been published in the news, but let me just find it. Karen Perdue, she's a former VP for health programs at the University of Alaska. She's the search committee chair. Okay. Myself, Johnny Brett Hart from IAB, Steve Brown from the Co-op Extension in Palmer, Rachenda George Bettisworth, who is a professor of social work at CLA, Mike Ernest, registrar. Mark Herman, the Dean of School Management, Larry Hansen, who was here earlier, Vice Chancellor for Research, Jennifer Imus from Wells Fargo, Tom Marzik, who is a Professor of Sustainable Energy at Dillingham, Debu Mishra, who is past President of Faculty Senate, Mary Pete, Director of the UAF Kuskokwim Campus, Bill Phillips from Anchorage, it's community, outside community member Jerry Simon, also from Glion and a community member. And we have some ex officio members, including Kelly Heidenbee, who's the CHRO, and Kari Burrell, who is the VC for admin services. And then Corinne Fisher is our executive assistant for the committee. So that's the membership. Yes. It was originally drafted by Kelly Hyde McGee, and the committee revised and adjusted it according to their okay, I just have a couple more things. The next thing is that I think I mentioned it earlier, the university is in the process of hiring a director for the Office of Diversity and Equal Opportunity. And as Chancellor Thomas mentioned, it sounds like that they would anticipate making a final decision on that this week, and perhaps announcing that decision or that hire either this week or next week. So if Chancellor Burrell told us to get last week. And then the last thing, again, back to the Staff Alliance retreat that we had recently. Staff Alliance has a compensation committee, and they have come up with some formal proposal for alternative compensation packages. As the Chancellor mentioned, the budget proposal will likely not include formal compensation increases, compensation package. And so in anticipation of that, the compensation committee, system-wide compensation committee, has been drafting and conceiving of some ideas for alternative compensation that the university could move forward with on a system-wide basis. There are a number of, I think, compelling options for that. I think that providing feedback on behalf of staff council is a good idea, both in regard to feedback about the existing elements of that compensation package, of those compensation ideas, and then also if there are additional ones that people would like to include that aren't already there. So that's something else that we can share. I don't think it's in our agenda package for today, but I'm happy to share that over email if people want to have input about that. Chris, that's a system-wide compensation committee. It's on behalf of Staff Alliance. Let me pull it up here just 1 second. The compensation, alternative compensation proposal. Okay. I'll look for it. I think in the meantime, I'd like to turn it over to Samara in case she'd like to offer that comment. Yeah, that's correct, Chris. It's currently being discussed at a system-wide level, although I guess what I'm suggesting is that we could provide some feedback to that from a UAM level. Okay. I'll look for that and make sure it gets sent around.
I'm just going to be really brief. They prepared my notes based on Staff Alliance and meeting with the party. I have also a few good notes, but I certainly won't listen to all of them, and many of the items have already been discussed today. But first thing I wanted to say, when I was talking with Larry Newton and I was telling him why I was at council, why I joined that council, and why it's important to me. And I don't know about all of you, but I'm required to attend a lot of meetings that I wouldn't choose to attend. And this is a meeting that I think all of us have chosen to offer them to join that council, and I think that's made it special. We all want to be there. And I think it has a different energy. So thank you all for being there. I think you can really say it. let's see. I just want to echo what you said about thinking better with staff. I had a lot of conversations when we talked to the executive board about being more intentional about how we connect with staff, and this is going to continue to be the input from the staff that they're hopefully making to talk a little bit more in detail about what we're going to do to connect better with the units we represent and provide We covered a lot of what you said in South Line, but I wanted to touch on what Kevin had been saying today, which he didn't use about the word. I was really encouraged and excited by the MVP of the Day of Moving Forward, Andrea. She talked about developing a leadership pipeline and making it more clear to when we move up within the organization how to do that. And if you want to move laterally, or if you want to join a different unit, you want to do something a little different, and feeling as though somebody's scared of how to get promotion or how to move around within an organization, she asked us a little bit about why folks don't take, a lot of folks don't use the decision maker, and our response to the response that she received is that people might feel confident that if they just get that master's, they would be able to move up to the over professional goals they have. So one of her focuses was on being clear about moving up and developing succession plans to people that are planning on hiring, so it's really clear in advance. And that excited me. I thought that was great. She also talked about the lack of trust that you have and how to teach you foster trust in this, and that's one of her chief concerns right now. There's a book called The Seed of Trust, which I didn't mean to read her lyrics, but she discussed and encouraged us to listen to. She also talked about CDs, and she talked about friends foundations and how we're going to be taking our staff at addressing these things a little differently. Once we get friends foundations up and moving, we can adjust successfully and start working with friends. PBs are no longer going to be discussing exactly what you're doing today. So they're going to be more general. For the performance evaluation, will be the place in which you can, where it will be clear what your mitigating position are, the extra policies taking on, and so that you don't have PBs that are completely different from job to job. Those are more like job family description. But she's very clear in that's not going to happen until the performance evaluation aspect is set up. Working successfully. She said that she and her UAS guy will have frequent sessions with UAS with managers or people that supervise others on how to use the performance evaluation software. Did you say what else on
Google
now? I think it's in the next month or two they'll be setting up those meetings that we can do. So we should think about coming out about it for sure. But just to be clear, she wasn't, and that rewriting people's thinking is a huge task, and she wasn't suggesting that any other people here that rewriting. If anything, it would be as people retire or leave their position, that any new people with their thinking and it's more general, and it's like a form of evaluation for moving forward and being successful. Check is also about how there'll be more checks and balances without the form of evaluation. I know some of that stuff. I'm lucky. I have had wonderful supervisors who've done a great job in providing me with some scholarships, but I know lots of folks are not so lucky. So now there'll be a way to know if there's going to be one, and your supervisor will be communicated with. I don't know how to communicate that. I guess what I'm trying to say is there will be checks and balances, so you're not suddenly have the general opinion, and so you're not getting the same evaluation. It's not at all just going to happen. So I hope, yeah. She said that very soon within the next month or so, and then they'll provide those trainings. I know Icon and her tried to play with that image, and so they think it's not ready yet.
Did you
want
to add anything to that? No, it's a priority of ours, I think, to make sure that moves forward, because I think initially, when it was initially announced, I think that the plan was to have it in place already, by now, So it seems like there's been delays, and so keeping a close eye on that, I think it seems clear that that's important.
Can you ask people to turn on the speaking to me?
Sure, if there are people online...
No, the people in the room.
Misunderstood. If there are people in the room that want to say something, just make sure, we can hear you up here, but in order to hear you online, you need to use your microphone.
I wanted to add also, and you know, let me feedback. I think it's really
important based on what I've heard from Dana and from Kari, and personally from having lived in very specific feedback to Dana, not just my role, but I think it's just in my normal job about social recalculation, is being really intentional and specific, because I think that's part of, not the problem, but part of our role is to be really, really specific about what it is that this option might mean, down to the details, because that's the part that they don't know, that's the part that they're missing more than anything else. Also, Kari asked us to be, and let all of you know that we need to have leadership, to be specific about which leadership you're referring to, interns, president, chancellor, the dean, the option, they're very different things, and we all didn't have the same leadership, we need to do this, leadership needs to be that, so when you're providing that feedback, you serve which leaders, your city advisor needs to be with. I also just wanted to mention that we discussed with Kari potentially establishing a formal assessment process to include shared governance and strategic pathways. As we said in phase one, it was kind of new. We weren't really sure how things were going to move forward, and now the goals of strategic pathways are somewhat uncertain or different than they were in the initial round. So it seems like Kari was open to potentially having that be part of moving forward, having a formal assessment piece that's what the shared governance. And then I think finally I'll speak to is I'm on the Vice Chancellor's Human Affairs Search. This is an open January 13th. It was advertised on the job site, Higher Ed Jobs, the Council of Higher Education, ACCA, College Student Educators International Curriculum Portal, and NASA. The first review date is February 5th, and we are meeting at the meeting in person for December 39th. The chair of the committee of officers, Vice Provost, Alex Mays, Colby Friel, Amanda Derringer, Sam Hubbard, Vincent Montez, Casey Miller, Keith Schwimmer, Jason Corner, Laura McCullough, Mark Olmsten, Ted Ayola, and Pat Sherman, and myself. And I think that's all I want. Thank you.
Okay.
I have a question about the pipeline and commercial slash lateral movement. That seems to include it on the stairway level, so that it seems to look at how it's being used for.
Yeah, okay, so we'll be here. So one of the things Kelly said was she ran a report, which is for the next 5 years. About 200 staff members that are leadership at the management level are higher, but sort of she might see that with leadership. Might potentially retire or could retire. And so that information hasn't dropped off in the next 5 years. So she felt it was a high priority for her within HR to work with leaders within the university to establish guidelines for a leadership pipeline for those positions. I think that's one of the reasons why she wants to generalize the situation as well, because then you'll be able to, they won't be as private because they won't be person specific. So a person could look at, this is where you can look at a job family and say, hey, it looks like these are the known qualifications to be this great at in this department, and then you can close those skills. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah.
I'm really enthusiastic and excited after talking to Kelly. I don't know her very well, and I know a lot of other people who have been working with her, and she has a lot of ideas, but they felt very focused and organized and doable. So, any other questions?
Great. Okay. I know we're a little bit behind, so we'll try and catch up here. We'll move into unfinished business. Some of these are items that we've taken care of kind of already, but I do want to have some time for discussion in case people have questions. Number one on unfinished business is the staff mentoring interest survey. We've been informed that the University Advocacy Committee will pick up the mentoring interest survey again in February. Is there anybody from the committee that would like to offer any other details about that? Move on, if not. Terrific. Thanks, Karen. Okay, and then second item B is the staff volunteer day proposal. This is something that has also come up through University Advocacy. We had a vote on this on a resolution support of this proposal within our larger group here at our last meeting in December. I was just informed this morning by the chancellor that even though I think the direction that we had pursued for that resolution was up through Staff Alliance the last time it came up here, that the chancellor's interest is in particular in supporting that. So it sounds like we may be able to establish support at the UAF chancellor's level before it goes to the Staff Alliance. So that's good news, and I think that we're working behind the scenes to make sure that happens in the short term and interim before our next Alliance meeting is positive. Staff, anything else you might like to say about that? Okay. Next is item C, pathways. Okay, so back to pathways. So as I mentioned, we did have some lengthy discussions at Alliance at that retreat regarding the ACE review areas. We did have some folks there that had served on the committee that produced the options reports. We also had some people in there that worked their day jobs in those particular areas, so we did have the benefit of some expertise and personal involvement with the review areas under consideration. And we also discussed, as I mentioned, the option of providing a consolidated response on behalf of governance to president's office. So it was a priority for everybody in Staff Alliance for officers to bring some of those ideas back to our local staff councils, and so that's sort of what's happening here. So if there is energy to consolidate or identify feedback that we have in common amongst this group, and then also perhaps pushing it back up to Alliance, I'm happy to facilitate that process. Sure. Yes. Yeah. So yeah, I'm happy to review some of the key points from our discussions during that retreat. I just want that to pull up.
I'm really happy we're bringing this back to work because part of our process was. Nate led the retreat, and he was going to sign the report as to come to home. So Nate led the retreat, and he wanted to sign the report to each one of us to go home that night and come back and present to the system next day. And in doing so, it was great to get fresh eyes, but some of the reports within the areas that were being reviewed, and we realized how much was missing. But it was lucky that I was looking to review that every day. Oh no, this is what this option actually means, and this needs to understanding of the CIO what changing university relations would mean. And so it became really evident that we needed a larger group to look at these things, because not all of us, we didn't have anyone, I don't think, in school finish or that would be affected by the healthcare part. So I'm excited that we're going to take it all here. I think without some things. We did come to what we sort of felt was the best option, but we could certainly do something.
Okay, so I don't want to get into too much detail on either of these, just in the interest of time, but I will go through the eight of them and just identify on some of them. You know, it became clear in our conversation that there was a particular option that seemed best from the limited perspectives that we had that would be the best in the best interest of system-wide staff, and in other ones it was more about identifying some clear principles or emphasis on pros and cons that the summit team should use when kind of trying to make a decision or a recommendation between the options. So the first one, the one that we discussed, was student services, and it seemed clear that, at least from the point of view of people that have experience, that option four, which is a consolidation of tasks across UA and statewide, was something that would be both realistic and positive in terms of change. Did you want to speak to that at all, Mara?
Yeah, I think it's just providing the best service to students, but also mandating on the provision of effort. The example I provided was an option to essentially make one place that they could let them see the research for entrance attrition, etc. And behind each campus spirit, China needs resources, or anything on the email as well. Anyway, there's some things that we do in our office that are important that we need to do that could be done also, or test for if you look at the client and don't have to be managed. So,
yeah. So again, if anybody has like particular interest in any of these, I would urge us to start from the options reports themselves. And so I don't know if we're going to be able to make any decisions at this meeting today, but I hope that this can provoke some kind of like outside conversation, either online or within our committees, to continue the discussion that's based on those, on the text of those reports. Okay. So then for institutional research, it was clear, I think, and the person that we had that was kind of in charge of leading the conversation about institutional research works in institutional research, and he has some experience in it. And so I think that it was a clear finding of this pathways team that currently institutional research is an area that's deficient, and that it's something that there's potential for improvement, there's a need for improvement across the system. And so, you know, like most of the review areas, the options kind of vacillate between more or less centralization. I think the opinion of our person on Alliance that has experience with Eric Johnson, you know, it's too decentralized. It really does stand to benefit from consolidation and centralization, so that even just like having equal metrics to use across the different MIUs seems like an important thing, because there's just a lot of different ways that things are measured. And so I think that it seems like option four, which is the one that it seemed like the committee, the review team was the most excited about. They came up with their own name for it. It's something called the Collaborative Knowledge Network. It involves actually increasing staffing levels for data management. It's also, I think, referred to as a transformative option. And I think that more and more, when I have conversations with people about pathways in general, it seems like there's a deficiency and a need for better data. You know, the review teams are making decisions that seem to be absent data and absent like metrics for how, why these are changes that are important, how the changes will be implemented, and based on you know, how they will affect the university. And there's just, it doesn't always seem like there's a clear idea of how much money it will save, for example, or what kind of staffing levels it will affect. And so institutional research seems like one review area that could have a disproportionate impact on the rest of the changes that they're proposing at the university. And so it seems like this is one that zeroed in on ways to improve that. So again, option four seemed like the one that there was the most support, both within the review team and I think amongst our group of governance people. And then for health, just moving on, for health, there were a couple of options there, both option one and option two seemed like they had potential. This one, you know, there was a clear goal to like meet a percentage of the labor market, and so I don't know, Samar, you were kind of in charge of that.
Yeah, I think option one is sort of what option two was, a a new role which would be something more about option one and three, and then option three was establishing a college of health. They were charged with looking particularly at nursing and allied health, but within option three, they had put an addendum about doing anything only health related, so students could study, and they could determine which campus this college would fit at.
But to me, that means an increased treatment of students. It seems like a reasonable solution. Just showing for the community.
Yeah, great. And then, so for HR, there was a spirited discussion about this. This was one where it seemed more clear that there were just some important principles to kind of keep in mind when making changes here. One of them is that there has recently been, I think it's the Human Resources Council, is that the consortium? There's a C, it's HRC. I don't work in HR. Council. So apparently, the Human Resources Council, which is like a system-wide effort, it's been a recent, fairly recent change. And so I think there's concern amongst that review team even, and certainly amongst governance, that making another sort of fundamental change to the way that human resources is organized, that there's a risk of change fatigue. And that I think that there's a feeling that this isn't, we haven't even really explored the potential positive or negative for this current structure. And so moving away from that into something that's fundamentally different from that again so soon could be risky. And so I think that in terms of principles like identifying consistency, identifying what you're really trying to achieve by making another change rather than just reviewing it because you're reviewing everything else. It seems like that's something important to identify if we're crafting any kind of response. Community campuses, there was quite a few options here, there were six. And I think that this is another area where it's just really most important to identify some values and some pros and cons. I'm not sure that there was general support for any single option, although there were, this is an example of the review team designing a new option that they, I think, had energy and some positive feelings about. They came up with some terms for new kind of collaborative networks between the community campuses. I think that there didn't really seem like there was a lot of support for trying to limit or consolidate the system itself, but I think building better connections and better networks. I think both option 5, which involves the establishment of the tribal colleges kind of network, and then option 6, which is sort of more formal and enhanced collaboration and alignment among the community campuses, those seem like they were the most popular amongst the review team, and so that's why I think that they had the most support in our conversations about them. University relations, as the Chancellor mentioned, has gotten a lot of energy and response. There are only three options there. I think that the conversation that we had seemed to identify there was some deficiency, and they neglected, that review team specifically neglected to provide any kind of status quo option. I think that that's probably consistent with the charge that they were given, but it's also an acknowledgement that most of the other review teams, even though they were asked not to, were providing some level of, like, there's an option to keep it the way that it is. And this review team declined to do that. So to us, that was a little bit of a red flag. I think the closest to a status quo option is option 1, which provides, I think, dotted lines but not solid ones. It does involve some level of consolidation, but also allows kind of embedded communication with people within certain departments. I don't think that within the alliance conversation that there was enough support for any of the one options to say that we could recommend any of them. But I think our conversation also included the idea that there was quite a bit already, 2 weeks ago, there was quite a bit of response to that feedback form. We received that indication from Michelle Rizek, for example. And so it seems like if there's a coordinated response on behalf of any governance group that it acknowledges that there could be more targeted, localized responses to that review area aside from the options that were provided in the report. Okay. So fisheries, this is the last one. For fisheries, which is we didn't have a lot of expertise within our team, although it seems that option one identified the status quo. That one, I think we acknowledged, didn't meet the charge. Option three establishes a joint program between UAS and UAS. And then option six consolidates fisheries programs at UAS. And so, it's hard with the conversation being diffused. So, we have representatives there from both UAF and UAS, and so it's hard to identify consolidation at one school without some resistance to that, I think, just like in general. But it did seem like there was reason to have some consolidation and to have some consolidation of administration specifically. So I'm not sure if this is one that will have a lot of. It doesn't seem like there's a clear path for a system-wide recommendation, but we can certainly respond from staff council here at UAF. Okay, and then So e-learning. It's clear when it comes to e-learning, I guess from my perspective, that in some ways, because it bridges, because it affects many different disciplines and many different academic programs, I think there's a tendency to think about it as an administrative kind of area. But I think the more that I look at it and hear perspectives from people who are involved and just get to know e-learning as a program, it's clear to me that it's best treated as academic, and that the best way for it to work is for e-learning professionals to be further embedded in academic programs, and not for it to be like further consolidated and for resources. I guess a little bit like university relations, it's counterintuitive to try and pull resources and personnel out of those programs and to try and consolidate them either on a MAU level or even on, especially on a system-wide level. So it seems clear to me that might be another one where just identifying that as a principle behind any decisions that are made would be particularly important. But that's just from my perspective. So that was quick. Yeah, that was a lot of stuff. Yeah, Carrie.
So that being said, just a clarification for e-learning, which option were you looking at?
Five.
I don't think it was option five, but I don't know if it was yet. And option five was?
I can pull it up here. So if I remember correctly, this is another example of one where, they kind of went through the motions of coming up with, well, this is what, more decentralization would look like. This is what consolidation at one campus would look like. This is what consolidation at statewide would look like, and so on. Until they got to kind of like the exploratory phase of like, well, let's design some kind of new consortium. I think they call it a consortium of e-learning resources across the system. And so it could potentially provide better connections and stronger networks between e-learning programs across the university, but it doesn't involve consolidating or centralizing actual operations. So you can look at that and say, it's possible to look at that and say, well, this is either going to cost us more money, or it's like sort of naive to think that the e-learning program at UAF could work so seamlessly and easily with e-learning at UAA. But it definitely seemed like the one that the review team was the most excited about, and there was the most positive energy behind. And that review team includes experts and professionals that are in charge of those programs now. And so it's hard for me to look at that and say that we know better than they do, and especially in terms of one where it's like they seem to be clear about the need to continue operating within academic departments, but that there could be better and stronger connections between their programs. I guess I believe that that's true.
Would that be consolidated at the UA level, or not consolidated, but UAS would still have an independent e-learning functions
aside from UA, that's definitely what the report says. Yeah. Any other questions or thoughts?
I think that that's all well said, Matthew. You're carrying to it. Go ahead.
I hate to address this on, but just an illustration of the importance of this point. I work at the Interior Alliance campus, and so we're one of the campuses that Nate just talked about. But we also deliver distance education to our students who don't get an education in a traditional manner. They can't come to a main campus, either UAS, UAA, or UAF, for 9 months of the year because their village might really depend upon them. And, you take young people out of the village and that leaves children and the elderly. So being able to, one, provide education to these students, and also allow them to be vital in their community is a really important thing. But the conflict here is that we depend on tuition revenue as a campus that comes to us through business education classes. So right away there's a conflict between, the purposes and motives or the agenda of e-learning and the mission of our campus, because we're fighting over the same dollars. So if e-learning becomes an academic unit of some fashion, then that those tuition dollars would go to that academic unit, and we would lose them as a campus. So there are lots of considerations to make, and it's not always a cut and dry as it might look, you know, in Ken Helms' paper. So I'm glad that as a governing body we can discuss some of these things, because I really feel that, you know, I have something to say in terms of both of the e-learning and campus outcomes. And I'm sure we all do. You know, and even if we work in one unit, like Matt works at residential life, you know, he might be affected by two or three different decisions. You know, a decision at the school of fisheries might impact the number of students that you're dealing with in terms of rent and stuff. So it's good for us to look at this and maybe have a Google Doc where we can just put down. I mean, we are experts in our areas, and so we need to have that voice.
Yeah, so I think that starting to go down would be a good place to start, but I also encourage you to write down the state of the sharing about the details. Like I said, I wrote to him a very helpful, very detailed email about this is what this would mean. We can do this, but this is what this would mean. And I had a really good response within 12 hours. That was not just like, hey, thanks, but it was really a thoughtful response. So I think that's super good feedback to make more things and also to get the form online. I just wanted to say something else real quick, because I do think it's hard to find a language to use. And you're addressing the need of glossary and terms to discuss the changing pathways, because it's really confusing sometimes to know exactly what you're trying to say. And it feels like folks that are living and reading it feel like comfortable with the language, and if you're sort of wanting to involve in your feedback, you really have to find the words to solve that.
Yeah. For me, leadership. Some way of campus overall, there's some there to be able to have the United States really people I know.
I do know that there's actually a meeting with every department that's directing that, but they can't with my small, like, communication team separately. And, like, so, where is that for their perspective?
Yeah, and then I think. I was thinking about just from this place, and I know there's a bit of a knock down. I think we are, in fact, we don't even know what it is and how it really happens, and we don't know what we can do.
Thanks, Holden and Matthew. I appreciate it. So I guess we do have to move forward because we're, you know, severely behind schedule. But I guess the way that I see this moving forward best, I guess my vision for it is again to encourage people to respond specifically through the official like feedback channel on the Pathways website. In addition to that, if we posted a sort of framework document for potential responses to each one of the phase two areas and shared that around within this group, then potentially if and when you respond to the pathways feedback, you could also just, you know, copy those comments either in like verbatim or in like an expanded form to like a comment or even like an edit to our pathways response framework, and then we can have kind of a conversation that way. If you feel comfortable, I do want to acknowledge that the advantage of the Pathways feedback form online is that it's anonymous, and so you can respond without identifying yourself. And I want to acknowledge that some of these areas are, you know, if you're responding by saying, like, well, I think that this should be consolidated as statewide, like, that's a legitimate opinion, but, you know, if you're concerned about, like, colleagues seeing that or your supervisor or something, then maybe there's a difference between responding to the Pathways form and responding to a Google Doc where the rest of us can kind of see it. So just be conscious of that. But if there becomes a clear consensus where we can draw out commonalities between the responses to this like feedback to this framework, we could craft that into a response document, either from staff council or push it up through staff alliance, and it might be effective as a community or a governance, a specific governance feedback letter. Okay. All right. We have to move on, but we'll share that with folks, and I encourage people to participate. We have a few items here on unfinished business that we've either already addressed or there haven't been any developments since December. That includes single accreditation. That's a topic that I want to keep on the agenda because the Board of Regents has specifically decided not to eliminate it, but they have, I think, decided not to move forward with the single accreditation process at this time, I think was the language that they used before. So it'll remain on our agenda up until they decide to take it off theirs. Budget update, I think, yeah, go ahead, John.
I have a question regarding the single accreditation. What is the community about? What is the community about pathways? Single accreditation is off the table. How can we actually legitimately talk about combining academic units, school ed, school district, all of those things like
I think it's a good question, and it is identified frequently in those options reports that accreditation, like the implications for our accreditation, are something that needs to be paid close attention to. And I don't know if people have a clear idea of how, for example, consolidating the School of Education at one campus and not the other ones will affect accreditation. I think that it is the case that, and I am by no means an expert on accreditation, but I do think that they can make decisions about program elimination without worrying. I don't think that our accreditation depends on a specific set of programs. I think that the Board of Regents can make decisions about what programs are offered and which ones aren't without risking, losing our accreditation or something like that.
It comes, I understand, and there is some problems with accreditation issues with that too, but the combination of things seems to be driving a lot of conversation. I think it's a problem with that. Why people keep talking about combining programs and
I share it also, and I think that there's a general level of skepticism about what motivated the pathways process in the first place. I think a lot of people suspect, or at least they did expect at the outset, that consolidating to a single university into three was what initially drove or animated the pathways process. I think since then, Chancellor Thomas led this report that recommended against single accreditation, and because of that, the President and the Board of Regents have changed their language and changed their approach, I think, to some extent. But it's true that I think there's an undercurrent that continues to be focused on why.
Thanks for the new chancellor. Is that something that we've talked about in the working team in terms of where they stand on that?
We have yet to get into sort of specific views on the structure of the university, but I certainly anticipate that it will be a topic of discussion. Okay, thanks, John. So I think Chancellor Thomas provided a fairly detailed update on the budget situation currently, both from the Board of Regents request and then from the governor's request. I think unless people have specific questions about that, which I'm not sure I have answers to, we'll move on from there. And then item F. Oh, is somebody online?
Yeah, this is Chad. My only concern about the budget is if you look historically across the funds from, you know, if you use the railroads that's available for public information. So if you historically from about fiscal year 11 to the current University of Austin Fairbanks itself is actually still increased half a percentage point overall in its funding. But if you look at the rural campuses, they've all lost approximately between 32 to 38% of their statewide funding, and I think that's something that we as a larger group need to be aware of and take a look at. That way we can try and make sure when budget reductions are being done, that it's being done equally, because any reductions at this point that are being done within the uniformity, we're not all starting at the same spot. We've already, in the rural campuses, tons of budget cuts have already been done. There are a lot of campuses that have already reduced aid areas. Almost every place is on a 75-hour pay period instead of an 80-hour pay period. Reductions on this end are a lot harder to make at this point than for other areas of the university as a whole. That's just a comment I want to make on the budget itself.
Thank you, Chair. That's well said. And it looks like Teresa also echoes that, so thanks Teresa as well. Okay. Any other comments about budget? Okay. Item F is furlough and leave accrual. We addressed that in part early on. People have any lingering thoughts about the furlough or the amendment to the resolution. Okay. We have also item G on here. It's an employee giving initiative. I think that this was initially brought up late last year or earlier last year regarding a suggestion by the chancellor to wrap up, if not an increased, you know, opportunities for employees to contribute at least a effort to better document and kind of show how much employees give and contribute to the university in addition, you know, to our professional work. I think our service and our sort of contributions to charity efforts that are coordinated at the university level. I think that that is something that still has potential, but unless anybody has any targeted comments about that or questions, we might just kind of table that until next time in the interest of time. Okay. Item H, UA Staff Makes Students Count Award. For any new members, this is another staff award. Nominations closed for this on the 20th. I haven't heard specifically about what the results of our, if we had any.
I haven't been able to get the nominations completely yet.
Okay. Further developments on that to come regarding where nominations go from here. And then item I, I made reference to that earlier, nominations close February 10th this week for the Cornerstone Award. So again, please consider nominating others, colleagues, friends, who you think are worthy of the Cornerstone Award. Okay, and I don't know if we had any submissions for staff achievements. Did you have any? Okay, no problem. Just I'll just make a note of that, especially to any new members. We are eager to reflect here at our monthly meetings achievements and highlights and accomplishments for staff people across UAF, and so if ever in the interim between meetings you have an experience or an event or an accomplishment by a staff person, yourself included, that you think deserves mention, it's a nice and uplifting experience to hear what staff are doing and the good work that we all do across the university. So make a note of that and submit it to Nicole or to us. There's actually an online form, I think, on the staff council thing. Okay, new business. We have orientation today from beginning in 6 minutes for new members. Certainly for incumbents, I encourage you all to attend, especially any committee members who are interested in reflecting the good work the committee does. This is the best chance, I think, to reflect on the purpose and the agenda and the priorities and the values for our constituent staff council committees, to recruit new members for those committees. We also discussed priorities and values of the organization, staff council organization as in general, and the governance, shared governance structure and process, as well as achievements that we've made in the past. So I encourage anybody who's able and willing to attend to do so. We'll be in Eielson room 304, and there will also be an option to log in and take part in the meeting over Google. Okay, moving on, unless people have questions about that. Any thoughts, questions? Okay. So 12, internal committee reports. I don't want to cut any of this short, but I know we do have some written reports, which I totally appreciate committee chairs submitting reports. I do want to give the option for if there's anything in particular that the chairs would like to add, or you know, if you want us to just refer to your written report, that would be fine too, but I want to give you the option to raise any other issues, either as emphasis or in addition to what you've included in the agenda. We'll start with elections. Jessica, would you like to?
So we do have our report included, but I also will be in the club meeting on Wednesday at 11 in the Lester building in Cambridge. And we're always looking for new members who are going to see us, and we're trying to learn how to do this function. So especially technical folks, we would love to recruit you. And so you're welcome to stop by and check us out. No obligation.
Thank you, Jessica. Membership and rules, Matthew.
It's been a reasonable report. I just want to make a comment that the committee decided to not pursue the concept of transmitting maximum seats that are for the public and holders in a minute at this time. Maybe I can talk about that now. And the thing that wasn't in the report that wasn't in the agenda that I just wanted to bring up was that I believe the NFL still has a great position. Is that going to be?
Is that
on
here? I don't know.
Unit 7 is still.
I moved out and then I think it was on. Right, and we're looking
at
it officially
then?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, I thought it was
Margaret. I think, yeah, I think he's trying to do it. Okay, Chris, do you have anything for rural affairs that you'd like to mention?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, my apologies, guys. We did not meet in January, but apparently it's been happening since the last meeting. Staff company. So I'm going to point a couple of things out real quick. Our top agenda items are we have identified some problems with a contract at the tourism museum. Actually, I was able to resolve one last week, and we'll be looking into taking proper action on the others to get those done. This is a really big deal, especially for the crews, the Kuliak. They have the potential to lose crew time off based on their rotation schedule, so we want to put a big focus on that. We have Chad and Lena working on the Rural Master, as we talked about, for delivery to rural campuses. trying to find somebody to get an update. We're looking to get Linda Jewell to stay for CSPD. I haven't heard an update on that. But we'll continue to work and move that. So, if anyone has any questions, I want to join our next meeting. It is Wednesday, 2 o'clock. Let us know. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Any questions for Chris? Okay. Staff affairs. Jane, would you?
Hi. So our training met in January, and we made a lot of progress on the goals and ambitions of the communications subcommittee, and what we outlined a plan going forward and developing a communication plan that meets the goals and the expectations that we wanted to accomplish. I don't want to get too far into it. I would refer you to my report because there's a net one. So, our next meeting is February 17th. If you have any questions about what the Staff Affairs Committee does or the subcommittee or the communication subcommittee and what its goals are, you can create a submission email.
Thank you. Okay, and advocacy, Sarah?
Nothing further from the attached report.
Yeah, and I would just emphasize again that those committee reports are all very good and informative. So for any new members or existing members, you know, incumbent members to refer to the reports. Thank you to the committees for submitting them. We have the Carolyn Sampson committee on here as well, in case Jessica or anybody else would like to. It doesn't look like you've met yet, but probably upcoming as that scholarship process gets moving forward. We have written reports from external committees, a few of them. Please consult those. We'll move on to announcements. Any announcements? Campus events, community events, anything that we haven't discussed that you'd like to mention?
I have one for the staff healthcare committee.
Sure.
Is it on?
It's on, I think, yeah.
Just want to emphasize everybody's time is running out to complete your health assessment and to get the health care rebate. I would highly recommend to do it. It's worth it $600, especially with the cost of our premiums.
Good point. Thank you. Any other announcements? If not, sure.
For anybody that is interested, the Geophysical Institute is we're in our yearly or annual rocket launch season, and we're making progress now. We'll be able to broadcast over the net for launches.
Cool.
And so watch the schedule on the GI website, and those dates are always, they depend on what the weather is. You can't launch in the clouds, so wind or something like that. But those launch dates, pay attention. You can be able to watch the launches inside your house if you want now. And things are looking pretty good there.
As to what Jesse said, we'll announce the link on the GI Facebook page. So the UAF users go to the Facebook page. We'll have a link to that live feed. And it's live except there's about a 30-second delay, so you can't wait until the count reaches 10 to go outside and watch. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
Is that to bleach or bad language? Is that why they're
saying no, it's just technical lag time.
Yeah. Thanks for that. That's cool. Any other announcements? Okay. Any announcements online? All right. Thanks very much. So we'll move into roundtable. We'll stop the recording.